a minimum in the morning hours on Friday, but we'll probably start off with some clouds and fog. But then Friday, mostly sunny, 70 to 75. At night, becoming mostly cloudy down near 50. Saturday features a chance of some showers. Only about a 20-30% chance on Saturday. Saturday's highs will be cooler in the lower 60s. On Sunday, it'll be cloudy and a 50% chance of some rain. Temperatures daytime in the mid-50s. An extended outlook, Monday, early clouds, then sunshine near 60. Tuesday, highs will range in the upper 50s with fair skies. Also fair on Wednesday, near 60. I'm meteorologist Steve Pelletieri for WVOX Worldwide and WVIP HD.
Steve Pelletieri's Eye on Weather is brought to you on WVOX Worldwide by Entergy and the Indian Point Energy Center, right for New York.
Every day, New Yorkers depend upon the clean and reliable electricity provided by Indian Point. On an average day, Indian Point provides about a quarter of the electricity for New York City and Westchester at lower cost than other power plants and helps our efforts to improve air quality. You have a right to know the facts about Indian Point, because when talk turns to extending the licenses of these plants, we all need to remember how important Indian Point is to New York. For instance, did you know that without Indian Point's lower cost power, our electric rates would be much higher, and that an equivalent gas-fired power plant would pour millions of tons of pollutants a year into the air we breathe, and that the independent experts in charge of New York's electric grid have said that the city could face rolling blackouts without Indian Point. I'm Teresa Motko, and I'm an engineer here at Indian Point, and my family and I live in the area. All of us have a right to know why Indian Point is right for New York. Visit rightfornewyork.com for answers.
From the historic city of New Rochelle, home of Lou Gehrig, Beachmont Tavern, James O'Toole, and the Soundshore Medical Center of Westchester, the great and growing hospital for you and yours.
Hello, New York. This is Bill O'Shaughnessy, and this is the spot. This is the place on the radio dial. Welcome once more to your own WVOX, the most influential station in New York State, for you and yours. A labor of love every day, I can tell you, and every night at 1460 and WVOX.com, now broadcasting all over the world.
1460 WVOX.
Good morning and welcome to Environmentally Sound. I am Bob Levensold, your host for the series on the natural world, education, and culture, and chronicler of the demise of Homo sapiens. We bring you guests from diverse disciplines, scientists, activists, authors, educators, entertainers, and public officials. We seek to stimulate your curiosity, intellect, and passion. Today's news from the natural world. Today is Thursday, March 22nd, 2012, the third day of spring. Glorious spring to follow the wonderfully mild winter we have had. And in fact, the prediction is, if this fog does leave in time to warm up, that we will beat our high of 77 degrees was high for this date in this area, all time since records have been kept. And they're looking at possibly breaking that 77 degrees. We have gained 3 minutes of daylight since yesterday, 38 minutes since last we met 2 weeks ago. The sun came up at 6:54 this morning. It will set at 7:10 this evening. We will have 12 hours, 16 minutes of daylight today. The moon came up at 6:33 this morning. It will set at 7:33 this evening. New moon was yesterday. There will be no moon in the night sky tonight, as we are so close to the new moon. The next full moon is April 6th. We did not get our newspaper today, so the only high tide I can give you is New Rochelle. That is 1216. Sorry about that, Yonkers and Dobbs Ferry and those folks. Let's perhaps we can refine that system somewhat in the future. A regular feature, names of American service members who have lost their lives at war. May they live on in all of our hearts. Casualties, the people that we recognize today, we acknowledge and we show our respect that way, is Second Lieutenant Clovis T. Ray, age 34, of San Antonio, Texas. He was with the 25th Infantry Division, killed by a roadside bomb in Kunar province on March 15th, which was last Thursday, 1 week ago today. Specialist Dequayne D. Rivers, age 21, of Mariana, Florida. He was with the 172nd Infantry. He died from injuries sustained in a non-combat-related incident in Paktika province on March 14th. Staff Sergeant Jesse J. Grindy, age 30, from Hazel Green, Wisconsin. He was with the 89th Military Police Brigade. Died in Kandahar on March 12th. No further details were given. These three American servicemen were alive on the date of our last broadcast 2 weeks ago. Each of these deaths is a great loss to their families and to all Americans. May they live forever in our hearts. The positive note is that there were three, not 10 or more, American soldiers killed, and they were all in Afghanistan. There has been only one death in Iraq this year, as we have dissolved pretty much our relationship in that country or our engagement in that country. So whatever happens in the Middle East in the future, and I wish them peace and happiness, absolutely, they deserve it, as do all other people living on this planet. At least no Americans will be killed. Hopefully the pullout from Afghanistan will be complete in 2013 or sooner, and this feature can come to an end because there will be no more deaths to report. Time for the Culture Corner, my review of plays, movies, opera, ballet, museums, and what have you. Keep in mind that these are my opinions and you have the right to disagree with them because everyone has the right to be wrong. Well, what we are going to review this week is a program called Jazz Highlights, Highlights in Jazz. Jack Kleinsinger is a legend in his own mind, but he's also well known, actually, for 39 seasons of the Highlights in Jazz series. They played at the Tribeca Arts Center at Borough of Manhattan Community College at 199 Chambers Street in Lower Manhattan. This auditorium is rather large for jazz concerts for a couple of reasons. First, you can't fill this room with jazz aficionados. There just aren't that many who will kick out $150 for a four-show season. Okay, that's only $30-something dollars per show, but there aren't that many people who love jazz enough to kick it out. You know, that's all. If you really like jazz once in a while, you can go to any of the fine clubs in Manhattan that provide it. But this, well, jazz is best in an intimate setting, actually, unless you're someone like Miles Davis, John Coltrane, Dizzy Gillespie, or Billie Holiday, all who are long gone and have not been equaled in popularity for decades. At Preservation Hall, America's Jazz Room in New Orleans, off Bourbon Street in the French Quarter, the lines are long and not everyone gets in. But there you can hear some of the musicians who created jazz in the very first place. Some are old-timers whose chops still work somehow and who play that Dixieland as it was when it was. There you can smell the sweat of the musicians and audience, and if you sit on the front row cushions, as I have done, you feel the spit from the horn players. Ah, jazz. That may not be an appealing thought to many of you, but that is what jazz feels like. Spit, and it smells like sweat. If you don't like it, then you ain't a jazz guy. Just like they say, if your guitar has not spent time at a pawn shop, you can't play the blues, or it can't play the blues. Anyway, if you are a jazz lover, you probably already know about Jack Kleinsinger's concert series. If you don't, then you should. So last week's concert featured Aaron Weinstein, a fine violinist, Jay Leonhardt, a great pianist, Barbara Carroll, and Paula West. Miss Carroll, an old-timer, is a fine jazz pianist, actually, but the song she selected, the technical term, sucked. She would have been a hit had she just played the piano, but it was hard sitting through some of the really bad songs she chose to sing. Goodness, there are so many songs. Okay. Sorry, we had just a little communication with my engineer. Okay. Paula West, also a singer, she was introduced as if she was a superstar, and she simply is not a superstar. She's an okay singer, took a couple of good risks. She sang Jimmy Webb's song, Wichita Lineman, and Bob Dylan's Like a Rolling Stone. It's good when a jazz person takes a pop song and tries to do something with it. But as a singer, I actually find her quite ordinary. No doubt some of these concerts are better than others. I have been to one other in the past and the memory is faded, so I really can't say, but I do tend to remember the best of the things I see. Then again, jazz can be very good, but rarely is. You need really good creative musicians. Even Aaron Weinstein, who was a virtuoso of the violin, he's great, but he got repetitive with the licks he played. Okay, you're very quick and you play really well, but you have to vary your style to stay interesting, and I quickly tired of the same old Mr. Weinstein kept cranking out. I don't know why. I mean, he had good patter, wonderful technique, and he just got boring. He just kept doing the same licks over and over and over again. So, Highlights in Jazz series at the Borough of Manhattan Community College has great potential because he has access to the greatest musicians out there. Jazz musicians are always looking for venues. Well, he didn't do very much with it, I'm afraid. Okay. My guest today, we have a couple of minutes to introduce him, is Professor Bob Hurley, a professor at Fordham University in the business school. His specialty is effective leadership and management. Welcome, Professor Bob Hurley.
Hi, how are you? Good to be with you.
Good morning. It's my pleasure. Tell me, I don't know where you are. You have a couple of numbers and a couple of places. You could be in New York, Connecticut, Florida. Where are you?
I'm traveling all around, actually giving a lot of talks about trust.
At this moment.
So I've been on the book speaking circuit, most recently at the Department of the Interior and the U.S. Treasury.
And the book is called The Decision to Trust. But where are you at this moment? We like to get a weather report. Where are you?
I'm in Connecticut.
You're in Connecticut. So your weather probably is much like ours, overcast, foggy, rather mild.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, okay, all right. Now, the decision to trust, we had a chat about trust and loyalty. So let's start with loyalty. Actually, you say loyalty pretty much in business is gone. Is that so?
I think so. You know, and let's be clear about what we're talking about, because people might have different definitions of what loyalty is. My definition of loyalty is that someone is loyal when they feel a sense of duty and obligation to you, even when it's not necessarily in their economic interests.
So right? That's loyalty.
So that, you know, okay. You've worked for somebody for 30, 40 years, and you've sort of... You're a little bit older, maybe a little bit slower. What duty do they owe you? I think in today's current climate, you know, loyalty is economically contingent, and so what a lot of organizations do is it's, you know, what can you do for me today and tomorrow?
So what about seniors then? What about people with wealth of experience, with a whole different perspective, people who have been through a lot, and they have an incisiveness and a wisdom that young people simply don't have. What happens to them? They're out of jobs now?
Well, if the organization feels that they are valuable, they get to keep their job. If the organization feels that they are less valuable and too expensive, we know what happens, right? There's a downsizing. There's an offshore. There's, you know, organizations are obsessed with their own productivity, agility, and competitiveness.
So is that a good thing?
I actually argue it is a good thing, that the era of I'll promise you a job for life, when it was economically viable, and I use IBM as an example of this.
Well, we're going to get into IBM in a bit. In fact, let's just take this opportunity to introduce our first break. This is, I think it's a business break, actually. I think that's what it is, so that's quite appropriate. Let's see what they have to say, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with you. If you're listening at Halfway Tree, Jamaica, Left Hand Bay, Alaska, Elmo, Montana, Tickle Creek, Oregon, or Tickle Cove, Canada, or Tallahassee, Florida, or Pitcairn in Mississippi, you have logged on to www.vox.com. You are listening live. I am Bob Loventhal. This is Environmentally Sound. My guest is Professor Bob Hurley. And we will be right back.
With business news at 20 minutes past the hour, every hour, here's the latest update from the Fox Business Network on WVOX Worldwide.
From the Fox Business Network, Wall Street kicking off the trading day in a sea of red. Concerns that China's economy is slowing faster than expected is overshadowing some better than expected news on the U.S. labor market. Just past 10 a.m. Eastern, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is down 60 points. Jobless claims hit a fresh four-year low last week. Claims are now at their lowest level since February 2008. 348,000 Americans filed for first-time benefits. It also marks the 10th straight week claims have been below the key 400,000 mark. And shares of Diamond Foods are sliding after the company announced plans to suspend its dividend. It's part of a new agreement with lenders. It will keep access to a key credit facility until June 18th. Diamond is also reportedly looking to try and raise capital in efforts to strengthen its finances. This all comes as the company works to restate 2 years of financial results due to improper accounting for payments to walnut growers. With the Fox Business Report, I'm Robert Gray.
Opportunity Louisiana. More and more companies like CenturyLink, Nucor, and Gameloft are finding success with Louisiana's custom fit solutions. Here's Gameloft's David Haig.
Louisiana customized their approach in recruiting us to meet our very specific needs. Selecting Louisiana as our site for expansion allowed us to open 3 to 4 months sooner than we anticipated.
What can Louisiana do for your business? Find out at opportunitylouisiana.com.
All the time.
Night, day, and in between.
We're always here for you. VOX.
1460 WVOX.
Okay, we are back. We are speaking with Professor Bob Hurley of Fordham University. We're speaking about trust. The name of his book is The Decision to Trust. Okay, Bob, we were talking about how companies actually choose whom to keep. I know several people who are getting on in years. They're making good money. They can probably be replaced by businesses, but for some reason these businesses keep them on. I'm a little puzzled, though. What happens? You know, I grew up in a time when you had a job and you were expected to keep it unless, I mean, things happen. You either move or you get fired or you quit. Or, you know, things do happen. But where if you fit into that company's culture, you were short of a job, pretty much. You could buy a house in that neighborhood and expect to be there 10, 20 years. That's not the case now, is it?
No, it's not. It's not at all. And you know, put this in a sort of larger context. You know, coming out of World War II, the United States had a tremendous competitive advantage. Europe was savaged. We had re-engineered our production processes for the war effort. We went into a massive expansion of the economy. And that continued for many years. We didn't have a lot of peers that could really compete with us on the global stage as far as economics and productivity, et cetera. And so that created a lot of stability and growth in U.S. businesses. That then fed into more stability and, quite frankly, perhaps even loyalty from an employment standpoint. Today, look into the future, right? We're competing with China, which has a vast long-term plan. India, you know, countries in Latin America, Africa is an emerging market. The world of business is a vastly different place than it was in the 1940s and 1950s. And part of what has happened in that is loyalty has disappeared. The ability to support someone even in difficult times is gone. And so loyalty is more economically contingent, and my argument is it's not likely to exist much for longer and probably doesn't exist now, but that we have to actually have trust. When we lose trust, we lose the ability to cooperate, to collaborate, and be productive, whether that's trust within a company, trust within a team, or quite frankly, even trust within a nation. And so our focus really should be on not loyalty, but in trust.
Okay.
How do we navigate these difficult, complex, changing environments in a trustworthy manner?
So what you're saying is, I interview you for a position. You're sitting before me and say, look, we're not going to guarantee you anything. We're not going to be loyal to you. We don't expect you to be loyal to us, but we definitely want to have what you have to offer for an unspecified amount of time, or if you want to do a contract, 1 or 2 years. We'll be very straight up about it. You're going to perform such and such functions, accomplish such and such goals, and then you're gone. Is that the way it works?
Well, or you're not gone, or we continue to have mutual interests, and we continue to treat each other with integrity and with transparency and honesty, and the relationship grows and blossoms. Or if our interests are no longer well aligned, right? My company needs to go produce, widget A, and you're an expert in widget B. We're probably going to need to part ways. There's a way to manage that parting of ways that is trustworthy, and there's a way to manage that parting of ways that is duplicitous and lacks integrity and is manipulative, where I use you as long as I possibly can, and then at the last minute say, well, gee, I've got somebody else because we're really going to start producing widget A. Good luck.
Right, and don't say goodbye to your coworkers. Don't have another cup of coffee. We're confiscating your computer. Get the hell out.
Right, we'll escort you to the door.
Right, and that happens frequently.
It does happen, but there are plenty of organizations that don't do that. There are plenty of organizations that are very transparent, honest, upfront, and with their employees. And I've even seen in really high trust organizations, when there needs to be a parting of ways, there can be a mutual understanding that is in fact appropriate. Given how the individual has changed or the organization has changed or the marketplace. And so you can actually do that difficult change in a high-trust way.
So it's
and that's really what I think we need to build, is organizations that are trustworthy.
So it's almost like everyone is a private contractor now. It's not even an employee situation, is it?
I wouldn't go that far because that actually implies there's no relationship. So I actually would argue that that's not effective. I mean, there's certainly some companies that are operating that way where it's a free agent market and, there is no relationship. It's just merely an economic exchange. But in more effective companies, a relationship does develop between employees and, quite frankly, between investors and customers and the company. And that it has positive emotion attached to it, that we actually believe and trust in in that institution, and that actually creates some positive, what psychologists call positive affect. So think about the word trust as sort of a little bit like the word love, right? It describes a relationship. And so my argument is that this idea of loyalty being the focus is probably misplaced. What we ought to be focused on is how do you have a trusting relationship with your employees, with your investors, with your customers?
Well, to begin with, I would never try to define love. I think I could probably have a better shot at defining trust, and that is simply I know that what you say, I know your word is good. If you say you're going to meet me on the corner at 6 o'clock in 42nd Street and 7th Avenue, I know you will because I trust you because you've told me either I have evidence that you have performed that way in the past, or as something else. Maybe there's just I instinctively trust you, but you also have a problem with instinct, don't you?
Yes. The neuroscience around trust is very interesting. We human beings are wired to instantaneously make trust judgments. We see a person's face, and part of what happens is we instinctively start to judge, have feelings of trust or suspicion. But unfortunately, that instinctive decision-making process, that instinctive sort of automatic judgment is often flawed. So, if you look at a picture of Bernie Madoff, studies have been done of his face. He had a very trusting face. He had all sort of the right trust features in terms of the cheekbones and the...
kind of a round, soft face,
yeah,
right?
Exactly, and the chin and whatnot. So that's not as precise. And so what I argue in the book is that we need to start to understand how to define trustworthiness more precisely. And I identify 6 factors that can help someone judge trustworthiness.
And we will come back to those 6 factors, and we will look at IBM's changes in the next half hour. You are listening to an interview with Professor Bob Hurley of Fordham University. This is Environmentally Sound on WVOX AM 1460. in New Rochelle, New York. If you're listening in Paris, Missouri, or Paris, France, Peculiar or Roach, Missouri, Jackpot, Nevada, or Cheese Quake, New Jersey, you have logged on to www.wvox.com and you are listening live. I am Bob Levinsohn. This is Environmentally Sound. Again, my guest is Professor Bob Hurley of Fordham University, and we will be right back.
With world and national news three times an hour, here's the latest update from Fox News Radio on WVOX Worldwide.
Fox News Radio. I'm Ron Flatter. He wants to move oil from state to state. President Obama speaking soon in Oklahoma, a day after saying in New Mexico his critics are wrong to claim that he's an obstacle to new drilling.
You'll know that they either don't know what they're talking about, or they're not telling you the truth.
Now the president heads about 70 miles up the road to Cushing, Oklahoma, the crossroads for oil pipelines in the U.S. He's set to announce new executive orders designed to speed up approval of a new pipeline from Cushing to the Texas Gulf Coast.
Fox News Radio's Rich Johnson in Oklahoma. He died after claiming to be an Al-Qaeda follower. A man suspected of killing seven people was shot in the head after French police raided his apartment.
He came out of the bathroom shooting madly at everybody.
A translator for French Interior Minister Claude Guéant. Police say Mohamed Marat was shot and killed as he jumped out his apartment window. Fox News. We report, you decide.
Now in Westchester, for corporate travel, executive transportation, and custom limousine service, the leader, clearly, is Excel. After two decades in the county, Rich Guberti's Excel Transportation Service does just that. Specializing in sedans, limos, and 14-passenger vans, Excel is the new class of the fleet and the Westchester leader in terms of cars, service, resources, and the quality of their Excel drivers. Most of the Golden Apple's blue-chip companies have, in fact, in recent years, switched to Excel for local transportation and city-to-city service to Washington, Albany, Baltimore, Hartford, Boston, and Philadelphia at rates even less than rail or air. And you can use them, too, for a trip into town, the airport, or any special occasion. Call President Rich Guberti at Excel Headquarters, EXCEL Transportation, 576-9797, 914-576-9797. These days in Westchester, the new car service leader, because Excel excels, 576-9797.
And now with your latest up-to-date forecast, here's Steve Pelletieri's Eye on Weather, exclusively on WVOX Worldwide.
Our Thursday morning weather forecast calling for clouds and fog to slowly, gradually burn away to mostly sunny conditions for the afternoon. Our high temperatures for today will range in the mid-70s when the fog this morning causing visibility is less than a quarter of a mile. For tonight, mostly clear for this evening, partly cloudy overnight. Again, that fog will form. Temperatures back into the mid-50s. Morning clouds and fog on Friday, then mostly sunnier. Highs between 70 and 75 on northeast winds. Mostly cloudy at night near 50. Saturday clouds, a chance of showers lower 60s. Also a chance of some showers on Sunday. Sunday's highs in the mid-50s. I'm meteorologist Steve Pelletieri for WVOX Worldwide, WVIP HD.
Here, there, and everywhere.
Every day, every night.
We're number one for fun.
At work, at home.
WVOX Worldwide.
1460 WVOX.
We are back. I am Bob Levinsohn. We are speaking with Professor Bob Hurley of Fordham University, the business school. He's a specialist in business, in management. Welcome back, Bob.
Thanks.
Okay, now, we were talking about Bernie Madoff, and the other person that you mentioned in our phone conversation was Joe Paterno and those other football guys who you wanted to trust them. And instinctively we did trust them because they were just so in tune with us, and yet it turned out that we should not have trusted them. Bernie Madoff certainly we should not have trusted. So, do you have anything else to say about a rigorous analysis where possible instead of crude instinct, which is what we generally do because it's easier, frankly, and we're lazy?
Yes. By the way, if you're interested in reading deeply about this, read the book Thinking Fast and Thinking Slow by Dan Kahneman, Nobel Prize-winning psychologist.
Very interesting.
Basically says that the thinking fast part of the brain, which was this intuitive part that I described, where we're making lots of trust decisions, is inadequate, and we actually need to engage the slow thinking part of the brain, to do a bit more rigorous decision-making with respect to trust. So I actually identify six factors that you should consider in making a decision to trust or be suspicious. By the way, you can apply those same six factors to think about how do you embed trustworthiness in a leader, and how do you embed trustworthiness in an organization. So the six factors are similarities, interests, benevolent concern, capability, predictability, and communication. And I'll very quickly talk about each one of those.
Please.
Before you decide to trust, you want to judge, do you have similar values with the person in whom you're going to place trust? If similar values are apparent, we tend to be more trusting. If values seem to be quite discrepant, we tend not to trust.
Okay.
Interests. When interests are aligned,
so,
we tend to trust.
Can I just ask you a question about that?
Yeah.
So would you say that the mistrust in politics, if somebody says, well, I'm a Republican, you're a Democrat, therefore your value system is off from mine, so I'm not going to trust you at all, even though there might be so much more in common than there is not in common.
That's a great example.
Okay.
One of the reasons for dysfunction of the government right now is that they are more focused on their value differences than their value similarities. Arguably, the Democrats and Republicans do not have a common definition of the role of government from which to govern. And so there's no platform for trust. By the way, after 9/11, this wasn't a problem because we were all Americans then, right? We were under threat.
Right.
We came together based on that core sense of values of being Americans. Since then, that has fragmented, right? And so now we have these camps and polar opposites. So,
and fragmented more than I ever remembered in American history at all.
Excuse me?
It's more fragmented. The trust is at its lowest point ever.
No question about it.
Yeah.
The surveys are very clear. Trust in Congress is below 10%. It's the
below
lowest 10%. It's ever been.
Yeah.
So this is a huge issue. And a lot of it has to do with this question of similarities. So one way to think about this is we tend to trust people who we think are part of our tribe. Well, that really begs the question, how do you define the tribe? In all high-trust companies, they have a very strong set of common values that bond people together and provide a sense of identity. When you say, so by the way, that trumps the subculture. So what do I mean? If you go to Google and you say, who do you work for? They don't say, I'm a marketer at Google. They say, I work for Google, right? Because the superordinate identity and value system is the enterprise and the values of the enterprise that have been deeply embedded, marketing cooperates with finance, which cooperates with the engineers, right? This cross-group, cross-silo cooperation based on deep common values. All high-trust organizations have a strong set of values that bond people together in the tribe.
And I guess Apple would fit that mold as well?
Apple fits that mold to some degree, yes.
But Google more so.
Their obsession with product, which is a huge part of their culture, and their obsession with excellence, I think provides that foundation. Apple's a little bit more of a complicated case because they have architected their organization to actually have a fair amount of internal competition as well. So
that
gets us into a little bit more of a complicated analysis.
So is this a good time to jump to the IBM thing and see how their culture has changed and how their policies have changed and how they exemplify what our government perhaps should do?
Well, let's do this. Let's talk through some of the other elements of defining trust.
I just want to make sure we have time to get IBM in.
We can probably touch on IBM as we go through this.
Absolutely.
Actually, an example of a few things.
Okay.
So another thing. So similarities. We have to gauge similarities. The other thing we have to gauge is alignment of interests. It's not a good idea to trust someone whose interests are not aligned with yours. And let's actually use this as an example. Talk a little bit about IBM. You know, if you think about the old IBM in the 1950s with lifetime employment, where they would find a job for you, even if you weren't quite as productive as they would like, right? They would find a position for you. Well, you know, in an environment where you have a lot of slack and you're incredibly profitable, you can get away with that. It doesn't hurt anybody else per se.
So they don't cut your salary. They just keep you at your current salary and move you to a less productive position, something like that.
Exactly. They give you some place that you can, you know, do something, and maybe you're getting paid more than you really should.
Well, that's
in an environment
that's a problem.
Of surplus.
That's a problem. Yeah.
That actually is okay, right? We can afford to give you your salary even though you're really not contributing that much.
But it is a problem because a lean company should only be paying, or a lean government for that matter, agency, should only be paying for what they're getting. So if you move from, let's say, a soldier on the line who's risking his or her life, maybe you're getting $1,000 a month. So when they move you to an off-the-line thing, maybe you're only worth $500 a month.
Right, but here's my point. When you have a lot of surplus, you can afford to be more generous. But we are in an age of scarcity. And so in that situation, it's not fair. It's not an alignment of interests among all stakeholders to allow that person to be in that job, right? Why? Because it betrays the interests of the shareholders, and actually it could contribute to the organization's demise if we do too much of it. Look at why General Motors went bankrupt. They went bankrupt in large part because they gave too much to the unions, and it was not sustainable. Well, they betrayed the interests of non-union employees. They betrayed the interests of investors. And from a long-term perspective, they, in some sense, betrayed the interests of the communities where those plants were, right? And it wasn't sustainable, and we had to bail them out, right? And so... So the alignment of interest is absolutely critical to making a trust judgment. And really good leaders find a way to align interests across all stakeholder groups, employees, communities, investors, customers, right?
Okay.
So that's really critical.
Okay.
And I would actually argue that IBM is doing a very good job of that right now, right? Because their interest is in a sustainable organization that can compete in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. And so they've been very honest and upfront about what's doable and what's not in that context. By the way, that leads us to the next dimension, which is benevolent concern. We tend to trust people we think care about others. We tend not to trust people who we think only care about themselves. So all high-trust organizations and all high-trust leaders manifest and exhibit this idea of benevolence and caring about others. So the degree to which IBM changes their pension plan to make it more sustainable and align interests, and the degree to which they do it in a fair, empathetic, and caring manner, we will trust them. By the way, even if we don't like the outcome, if they do it in a fair, benevolent, caring manner, we're more likely to trust them, even if the outcome is not what we would have desired.
You know, this is one thing that's sticking a little bit. You say that if we don't have a common interest, we don't trust. Sometimes I may be misquoting you, but that's the sense I get, that people who have different value systems, perhaps, but you can kind of trust them to be consistent, at least, within their value system. Isn't that so?
Well, there's a difference between trusting someone and someone being predictable. I define trust as confident reliance in a person, group, or organization in an uncertain and risky situation, right? When things are certain and not risky, we don't think about trust. We don't have to. So I would actually argue that predictability is different than trust. You might be able to predict what Osama bin Laden would have done, or Hitler, but I don't think you'd trust them.
Okay, that point is well taken. All right, it's time for us to take one last break before we finish up. We are listening to Environmentally Sound on WVOX AM 1460. My guest today is Professor Bob Hurley of Fordham University, a professor in the business department. This is Environmentally Sound. I think I said that. I am Bob Levinsohn. I also said that. And if you are listening outside of our broadcast area, which is Southern Westchester, Southern Connecticut, Northern Bronx, and some far afield, and the North Shore of Long Island also, and some far afield places, you have logged on to WVOX.com, and we'll be right back.
With world-
world and national news three times an hour. Here's the latest update from Fox News Radio on WVOX Worldwide.
Fox News Radio, I'm Lillian Wu. An over 30-hour-long standoff ending in at least 4 minutes of this. Self-proclaimed terrorist and killer dies during a gunfight in Toulouse, France.
300 cartridges expended as police special forces storm the apartment where Mohamed Merah was. Apparently, he came out of the bathroom where he was holed up with guns blazing and then tried to jump out of a window when he was met by that gunfire.
Fox's Greg Palcott on the scene. Police say it was a shot in the head that finished him off. President Obama's in Republican oil country speaking in Oklahoma this morning, laying out
new executive orders aimed at speeding up the permit process for oil pipelines. And it puts at the top of the priority list the line from nearby Cushing to the Texas Gulf Coast.
Fox Radio's Rich Johnson and stocks trading lower on worries about China's economy. Fox News, we report, you decide.
WVOX and Hope Community Services have partnered for a special cause. Hello, I'm Wayne Gilman. Did you know in the last 3 years we have seen a 50% increase of families, senior citizens, children, and veterans needing a hot meal at our soup kitchen and food pantry? Join WVOX and Hope Community Service as we raise money on March 29th from 3 to 6 p.m. on this station. During these 3 hours of special programming, you will hear from people who have benefited from our soup kitchen, food pantry, eviction prevention programs, and our all-important volunteers. So please make a difference by pledging any amount you can give. Join us on March 29th and spread hope.
This is the authentic voice of the people.
It's a community station.
AM 1460 WVOX.
1460 WVOX.
We are back from the for our last segment, speaking with Professor Bob Hurley of Fordham University. Bob, a couple of things that I've been thinking about in the meantime. When you mentioned the book Thinking Fast and Thinking Slow by Daniel Kahneman, who is, incidentally, as we know, a Nobel laureate in economics, the meditative approach of thinking slow, of taking your time to actually digest a situation, can that possibly work in business and in government rather than being so highly competitive at all times?
Sure. The best run companies, the best executives, don't get caught up in the in an ongoing attention deficit disorder. They actually, even in quite chaotic situations, step back and think.
Good.
And by the way, that makes them more trustworthy. So, you know, that was another element of the trustworthiness I wanted to talk about, which is capability. Okay, it's not a good idea to trust people that aren't competent.
Of course. I
think. And leaders that are impulsive and have a bad case of ADD and can't don't sustain things tend not to be trusted.
All right, let me just back this up a little bit. My experience of competent and trustworthy, I would say, executives is these are people who get to work early so that there is no distraction in the office. They are available. They are thinking. They are spending, rather than sitting home with a paper or TV or kids and wives, they're at the office where they can absorb and be absorbed into their work. And in fact, my best success at contacting executives is actually calling 8 o'clock or earlier, 7:30 in the morning, and rather than have a secretary who doesn't start till 9, you get the executive sometimes. So that, did you have anything to say about that?
Well, there's an infinite number of ways to be competent. You know, there are a lot of competent people that don't get in early. So, but your point about being disciplined, I think, is absolutely on the mark. You know, highly competent executives are thoughtful, strategic, not overly impulsive, and they think about. I was actually having a conversation with an executive at a financial services firm last night. The company's going through some strategic challenges, and a lot of the people in key positions aren't thinking strategically or systemically about the problems that the firm is facing. And so they're chasing their tails. They're treating symptoms, not root causes.
So these are people you would not trust.
Well, they're not. Yeah, I would not trust them because they're not capable and competent to deliver
right.
on their commitments.
And they are impulsive and rattled.
Yeah. So to be trustworthy means to be excellent and to be capable in the manner in the matter at hand. By the way, the highest from a capability and competence standpoint, high trust executives also are very humble in that they know what they don't know and they admit it and they seek help. Which makes them even more trustworthy.
Well, this, of course, is across the board in human experience, certainly in personal relationships. You can't always act with bravado, like I know everything at every moment. If you hit a snag, be it in a personal relationship or a business relationship or a governmental relationship, you got to say, you know what, I really do need to talk to somebody who can at least give me perspective, if not information.
And here's my point. When we are more discerning about trust, we pick these things up, right? We notice the difference between overpromising and bravado versus being more careful in what you say, being sure that you can deliver on what you're committing to, being more measured and humble in terms of how we communicate. You can pick those things up. You can pick those things up in leaders. You can pick those things up in political candidates. And we need to get better at doing that.
But in fact, we kind of said that loyalty is gone. But if you work for somebody that inspires loyalty, there's nothing that he or she can do to dispel it. You want to be loyal. You don't want to leave this person. You trust them.
Well, there is something they can do to dispel it. There were a lot of people that were intensely loyal to Bill Clinton until the Monica Lewinsky scandal, right? I mean, you can betray trust,
okay,
and you can lose it. By the way, you can also repair it, and Bill Clinton's actually a great example of that, right?
Okay.
He went from the disgrace of Monica Lewinsky scandal to doing some incredible work in Haiti and after Katrina, and in fact, I think it was Chris Matthews that called him the world's president. Right, so he's done a tremendous job of repairing trust, and that actually gets to another dimension to trustworthiness, integrity. One of the reasons that Bill Clinton has repaired his perceptions of trustworthiness is that he hasn't had a major integrity violation that we know of, right, that's been public since Monica Lewinsky. And so integrity and predictability is a really important part of trustworthiness.
But how do you separate a personal indiscretion like that from doing his job? As far as I can tell, he was doing his job as president while he was being less than faithful to his wife. How does one affect the other?
Well, that's actually an interesting question. And by the way, the answer to that would vary depending on what culture in the world your lens is coming from.
So
in England,
we don't separate and France,
in the U.S.
In England and France, it's okay, it's just indiscretion. Here, it's some kind of moral violation.
It's a character flaw, and we tend to generalize that personal character flaw into business. We tend not to separate. We tend to think that character is character, whether it's personal or business.
I guess I'm more European in outlook, personally.
It sounds like you are. Yeah, you're certainly not the moral Christian view, which says that this is a fatal flaw.
None of the above. I am none of the above.
Right. By the way, the last dimension to assess trustworthiness is communication.
Okay.
Open, transparent, empathetic communication where there's listening is essential to trust. It's the lifeblood of trust, right? So, to what degree is there frequent, open, transparent communication? Will someone tell me what I need to know that will, in fact, maybe not enhance their position, right? Will they be transparent? Will they be forthcoming with that information that is something I really need, and they know that if I know that piece of information, I may not support their position? Will they tell me,
or
will they hide it?
What you're saying is that the personal qualities, these six things in your book, are actually more important than super brain power, because intelligence is not among those. So someone could be way smarter, but lacking these personal qualities and these business postures or positions, the better CEO or manager would be someone who has the personal qualities, the communication skills, the exuding trustworthiness.
No question about it.
Okay.
By the way, you know, a certain level of intelligence is important, right? And it certainly is connected with my dimension of capability and competence. But you need much more than IQ. You need IQ and EQ, emotional intelligence. You need to understand other people's needs, other people's interests. You have to be able to communicate well. You have to manifest some degree of benevolence with the people that you're leading.
So none of that stuff is what you learn in school. I mean, you can take your degrees and all that, and you're going to be informed. But other than a few programs which do focus on your EQ, if you wish to put it that way, you have to pick that up in your life.
We teach that at Fordham. We believe it's important. We believe it can be taught. And we teach that at the undergraduate, in the Gabelli School of Business, and in the Graduate School of Business. You know, this idea that it's not important and it's not taught, I think, is not correct.
But it can be taught.
Some schools are teaching it. Some schools are emphasizing it. And I think those schools are more likely to produce trustworthy leaders than schools where it's just about IQ and financial engineering.
But what you're saying is kind of that the program is almost a therapy, which enlightens a person. I mean, you can't fake these skills.
I wouldn't call it therapy. I would call it. We spend a good deal of time in the in both the MBA program and the undergraduate program, trying to help our students understand what leadership is. And trying to become self-aware. And what I mean by them becoming self-aware is they need to understand who they are, what their signature strengths are, what their weaknesses are, and how leadership could be manifested through them. And that we don't want them to become like another leader. We want them to figure out and discern how leadership can be manifested given who they are.
So
we're not trying to make everybody into a Winston Churchill.
So if you get an uptight student, you really can't convey that, because the second they're out of the class and they're not doing exercises anymore, they're not going to exude those things. They're not going to demonstrate those qualities at all. If they're uptight, this what it sounds like to me is the program is designed to graduate students who have a mellowness, which is essential to carrying off all of these qualities.
I don't care for the word mellowness, because it implies passivity.
Okay.
You know, what we're trying to do is to show them a model of trustworthy leadership that they can understand, and that they can start to think about how they could model and manifest that. Ultimately, it's their personal decision as to whether they do that or not. So I agree with that. But we want to leave them with a very clear view that this is a virtuous approach that is sustainable and makes lots of sense given what we know about leadership and management. And we want to offer them a way to start to manifest that. They choose not to. That's certainly their choice.
Well, I'm not sure it's their choice. It's based perhaps on who they are and how they've grown up, and it's more than choice. But I mean, we can differ on that point. We don't have time to differ on the air on that point. It just seems to me that anybody who I've admired in the past has a lot more. Has a personal something, je ne sais quoi, you know, just they inspire that. Anyway, thanks so much for being with us, Professor Bob Hurley. It's been very interesting, very enlightening. And of course, as always, it invites further discussion.
Glad to be with you, Bob.
My pleasure. I'd like to thank Professor Bob Hurley for joining us on Environmentally Sound this morning. Is major change to our form of government inevitable? That's something we didn't actually discuss. There are those who cannot imagine America as anything but a democracy, and speaking otherwise is heresy, but would that be a bad thing? We spoke about perhaps a parliamentary form of government. Anyway, our thought for the week, a point of view is not as important as an open mind. Stay tuned to WVOX, your quintessential community radio station, the flagship of Whitney Radio, the best small station in the U.S. of A., perhaps even the world. Next up, Howard Sturman. Remember to be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a great battle.
You're making the workday fun.
Just fun to listen to.
AM 1460, WVOX, New Rochelle, and WVOX Worldwide.